Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Dr. Elia Serhuni, Director of the National Institutes of Health. And joining us on our conversation is Tony Hess. Dr. Serhuni, what are some of the major initiatives going on at NIH right now?
Well, many. One thing that is really important for an organization as complex as NIH is to always have a strategic framework. And one of the things that I learned very quickly is that NIH is so complex that you can spend a lot of your time handling the urgent and the crisis and not handling the important. So the way we went about it is very early in my tenure, within 6 weeks of my arrival there, I organized a series of meetings, both with the outside community, the scientific community, and the scientific community at NIH. Everyone came to the table, and I said, you know, the first thing we have to do is we need to know where we're going in this early part of the 21st century, and we call that the roadmap for medical research process. And within a year, we came up with a major initiative called the Roadmap for Medical Research in the 21st Century, which is the first trans-NIH, cross-cutting, cross-institute vision about where medical research, biomedical and behavioral research need to go and how you get there. So that was my first initiative. And then every year, we pick a topic that we think requires an in-depth look. So the second year, that was 03, 04, we picked obesity, as I told you, and we came up last summer with our trans-NIH obesity research plan. And this year, we're working on the what we call the neuroscience blueprint. And the neuroscience blueprint is the realization that if you combine the burden of mental health, behavioral problems, and neurological diseases, you're talking about $500 billion a year of impact. Compare that to diabetes, $119 billion, or obesity, about the same amount. So we realize that at the frontier of research right now, there are two major obstacles. One is at the molecular level, we do not understand the complexity of how genes and proteins are interacting with each other. It's what we call a systems approach to biology. And that's what I've been promoting and pushing and trying to get people to organize themselves in interdisciplinary teams to address those problems. But the second major challenge of this century is understanding how our mind works and how our brain works. It's probably another order of magnitude more complex. And that's why we came up with this concept of trying to define what mysteries we need to go after to understand the behavior and behaviors that lead to a lot of disease burden. I mean, if you removed smoking, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, and mental health, you would reduce the disease burden by 50% in our country. So it's a huge challenge.
Let me shift gears a little bit and ask you about NIH's public access policy. Could you tell us about the goals and the procedures of this policy?
Right. So the public access policy came, again, from a sense that the way we conduct science is changing rapidly because of information technologies. You know, we have one of our institutes is the National Library of Medicine. And since the 60s, the National Library of Medicine has played an enormous role in bringing together the entire scientific literature related to medical research. And one of the things that we've become quite aware of is that researchers now use the information available in public databases as a tool, not just as a repository of what they did in the past. And it's an active tool. So the one thing that we said was needed was for us to be present in making sure that we had open, public, rapid, easy access to complex medical information. Now, when you look at the world today, most of what's transmitted is transmitted in print. There isn't really the capability to research the concepts that are in papers across multiple papers. You don't have a single database where that is archived. NIH, for example, funds 60,000 scientific articles a year, but you couldn't go to any one place and say, okay, let me analyze what the portfolio of this research is. How do I know that what I'm paying for is generating knowledge that is worth paying for? So those are the goals of the public access policy. One, create an archive that can tell the U.S. public, the taxpayers, what it is that they're getting for their money in terms of scientific output, publications. Two, for the agency to be able to do what I just said. How do you manage your portfolio? How do you know if you're not overinvested in one area and underinvested in another, if you don't know what's coming out of your processes, you see? That's a management a radar, if you will, that you need if you want to guide an agency today. This is not what it used to be. you couldn't really comprehend medical research today and know where you need to go without tools like this. And the third is public access, because I think the public needs to have a look, and not just the scientific public, but the patient constituencies, parents. 58% of Americans who have internet go to their doctors with internet-derived information. Can you imagine? 58% today. There are 93 million Americans who have an internet connection, who search the net for relevant, high-quality medical information. I think it's an opportunity, I think, for federal agencies to show leadership here. And that's what the public access policy was. It was a precedent setting. Never before had any federal agency said, you know what, it is important to us not just to generate the knowledge, but to make sure that it is accessible.
Tell us about some of the management challenges then of rolling this policy out.
Well, the management challenges are, you know, it's a changing culture first and foremost. That's important. I think you need to really educate the scientists and the scientific societies and the publishing world and so on. So one of the things that you need when you roll out such a thing is to make sure that you have champions within the organizations that know and are what they're doing and they're committed to the goal. I think we have that. The National Library of Medicine is one of the most, of all the government sites, is the one that is the most sought after in terms of contact from the public to get medical information. The second is, how do you adjust the policy in a dynamic way so you don't really have stakeholders that are left behind or don't understand? And that is the most tricky aspect of managing a large agency for a project like this. So what we did is I established an implementation group, which is made up of multiple stakeholders that will oversee the development, implementation of the policy, and will adjust it accordingly. That's one of the things that's most difficult in managing in government today. Is almost like, you know, people have this traditional concept of first aim and then shoot, as if it was a final thing. Well, sometimes you may want to start something and then steer towards the goal. And that is what I think is happening here, is that we first, you know, frame the debate and understand the vision and then set energy in motion, if you will. And you may not have all the answers from the get-go, but if you put a dynamic and adaptive process in place, I think people will follow you. I think they'll follow the lead as long as they trust that they can be at the table. And in the public access domain, you know, you have publishers who are very worried about their revenue source. You have scientific societies who rely on their publication revenues. And so we have to do it carefully, but I think with clearly the goal in mind of having easier exchange of scientific information accomplished in this century.
Well, tell us more about the relationship then between NIH and the private industry sources who were previously sort of working with this information.
Clearly, NIH funds the research that makes that possible. So if you looked at the cost of a publication, the cost of the publication is really the end point of a long process, which we funded when the research was conceived and then realized and so on. On the other hand, there is a very important role that is very critical for the private sector, and is to accomplish what I call independent peer review. You don't want a government agency to start passing judgment on what's good science or bad science. And I view the private sector in the publishing world and the scientific societies as critical quality control elements, if you will, of the research we fund and the research that gets published. And that's very important. And that role I want to preserve. I want to make sure that they're not, that the peer review system is not affected. So we're going to watch carefully this, and we're going to have formal evaluations of that going on so that we make sure that we titrate our policy to preserve that, the private domain, I think, which is to really have innovation and create revenues that are sufficient to support the mission of publishing.
That's an interesting point. How important is inter-institute collaboration? We'll ask Dr. Elias Serhuni about this when our conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.